Well, those are some shoes I'm supposed to fill. You set a very high bar. Let's see what happens. In the late 1980s, I went through an extended period of deep meditation. I was in prison. As I told Betty Taleski, it was a monastery I would have chosen on my own. Nonetheless, it was a monastery that I clearly needed. And during that time of meditation, a number of words came to me, words which were later distributed at Eckhart Tolle's seminars in Vancouver by his publisher, Connie Kellogg, when I sent them to her. And one of those phrases were, believing myself temporal, I became afraid of the eternal. Well, this morning I woke up and these words were in my mind. Knowing I am eternal, I began looking at the temporal with new eyes. This summer, Reverend Christine Fassetti was woken up in the middle of the night, as she tells it, by the Ascended Master, Saint Germain. And she said it was so intense, she had to go to the living room or dining table and sit down and scribble down what he was telling her to do. And one of the things he told her was take the temple ministers to Camp Chesterfield. And last month we went. 16 of us. Not a small task, nor one that was without monetary cost in this day and age to go halfway across the country. And so the temple ministers did, and we were there. And while there, we were gathered at a seance by Reverend Glenda Carteret, a medium at Camp Chesterfield. And during that seance, Saint Germain came in and addressed us collectively. And it was stunning. But before he did that, through Glenda, Spirit had a message for each and every one of us. The message was from a loved one, perhaps, now in spirit, or an ascended master, or a guide, or insights that each of us needed to hear. And mine was real short. That's what I remembered. And it was from Bucky Fuller. And Bucky came in and he said, after he introduced himself, "It's begun. Prepare others." I was taken aback, and Glenda moved on to the next person. And then after this incredible event, I was outside. Martha Booz came up. And she said, "What was it exactly, Martha? You said you're supposed to prepare," something like that, wasn't it?
"I'm ready to be prepared."
Oh, that, yeah, "I'm ready to be prepared." Yeah, she said that. I remember it too. And the reason why I remembered it so much was that I had no idea what I was supposed to say. I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And to put an exclamation point on it, Martha came up and put it on Front Street. Well, I knew what Bucky meant when he said, "It's begun." And what Bucky was referring to was the crises that we are entering. In 1981, Bucky wrote in his last major book, Critical Path, his advice to humanity. And he said this: humanity was entering an unprecedented crisis designed by universe, God, to transform humanity from its present differences-based, different ideology, different speaking, competitive, warring factions into an interdependent, interharmonious whole with a level of abundance we can't even yet imagine. 1981. But he also said the crises would be unprecedented. And I told Marshall, my friend who knew Bucky, I said, Marshall was an Aries. He loved the upside, the abundance, the sharing, the goodness. I had a wider view. And I said, Marshall, Bucky used the word unprecedented. And he knows everything that happened to humanity. Let's wait and see what happens. Well, 3 years ago, I wrote a book. And I realized in the interim that it is totally about the crises. We were on the verge of it, and now we're entering it. As Bucky said, it's begun. The book was called Docking of the Mothership, Notes on Going Home. I want to read you the back page blurb. In 2007, in his book, Time of the Vulture, Daryl Robertson predicted a severe economic crisis was going to happen to the U.S. and global economies. The crisis began in 2008. Today, in 2022, it is approaching its inevitable and catastrophic resolution. In Docking to the Mothership, Notes on Going Home, he explains the purpose of the crisis. The economic crisis is an opportunity to remember who we are, to reconnect with the Creator, and to regain the power that is ours. A fundamental shift in human consciousness is now underway. Today's institutions, economic, political, and religious, are collapsing. Yesterday's answers can't solve today's problems. Tomorrow's answers will. Buckminster Fuller, in Critical Path in 1981, wrote that humanity was entering a crisis without precedent. Universally intended to transform humanity from a competitive, warring state of scarcity into a cooperative state of abundance for all. Fuller also wrote that humanity is now in final exam to determine if it qualifies for continued existence in the universe. The purpose of Docking to the Mothership, Notes on Going Home, is to help readers pass that exam. I wrote that in 2022. And last month, I'm in that seance, and Bucky comes in and says to me, it started. Prepare others. And I walk out of the room, and Martha goes, prepare us. And I did not know what to do. I turned to Martha, and I told her that. It sort of shook me up. Well, this is a month later, and I do have some ideas. Ideas I was never intending to share this so soon into it. But this is how it came to pass. Last Monday, during White Eagle, Martha Booth is reading, Everything's a Divine Order, something from the book called Group Consciousness by White Eagle. And it's called Initiation into Service. And she's reading these words, and I heard them. Your world today is in a state of chaos. And the chaos must be brought into order, into form. This is done through the will of those children of God, whether they be human or angelic, who have been taught to use thought power to mold the nebulous thought substance of people on earth. The prayers and good thoughts of the people will bring about victory over evil. Well, those who have been taught, those who have been taught to use thought power, those words had special meaning for me because it was clearly I've been taught through adversity about the power of thought. When my tarot card was pulled for the first time in the year 2005, I'm a hippie and I never pulled my tarot card before. That's something, you know? That's something. And I pulled my card, and I looked at it, and I gave it to the, you know, and I said, what is this? And she looks at it, and she goes, card number 5, the Hierophant, learning through adversity. And I knew it was true. As I told somebody in Italy that I had met on the plane in 1982, my life hasn't been easy, but I'm the luckiest person I know. And he looked at me and he said, "What is luck?" And these words came out, "Luck is love's reflection shining on your path." I had no idea 3 years later I'd be given a 10-year prison sentence when I said that. And I can say today, I am still the luckiest person I know. My thought, my course into thinking, thought power, started in 1972. When I got a 73, when I got a phone call from my friend Marshall Thurber. And I had met Marshall in law school in 1966. And Marshall was an Aries and wanted to change the world. He was the one who later knew Bucky really well. And he ran into me and we became fast friends. I, however, didn't want to change the world. I was looking for protection. I already knew what was going on. I counted up the odds. I was outnumbered and I was going to lose. That was my theory. But Marshall wanted to change it. So he says, "Daryl, I want you to write an article." And he puts it, I do, finally, after much pushing. And Marshall puts the article on the front page of the Hastings Law School newspaper in January 1967. And the article said, "God respond, the church liable for acts of God." Now, I don't know if you know what that means in tort law. Tort law is a fundamental principle that all acts of God, no one's liable for. These are natural disasters. These are earthquakes. These are tsunamis. And there I wrote, "Church liable for acts of God." On the cover of Hastings Law School newspaper, it wasn't The Onion. Marshall almost got kicked out of school. The newspaper was never distributed. And that October, I was on my way out anyway. I had already dropped acid. I left law school and I was running the food concessions at Avalon Ballroom. And as my law school class was graduating, I was in jail for selling LSD. That's 69. In 72, Marshall calls me up. "Daryl, you got to read this book I just got." So I go over. It's a little book Marshall had ordered online. And it was called The Lazy Man's Way to Riches, which turned out later to be the largest selling, direct selling book in the history of publishing. And it was $10 at that time, which is a lot of money in that time. So I have $50, $60 now. But it had a money-back guarantee. And let me tell you, Marshall wasn't lazy. Marshall was an Aries, and he was driven. But his circumstances were such. He grew up poor in Vermont. Marshall said, casually, he said, "We went without shoes in the summer because we knew we needed them in the winter." All right? When I met Marshall in 1966, he was driven and he wanted to make money. And he was intense. I, middle-class kid, everything was good, except for our parents who wanted us to do all these things that, why couldn't we enjoy life? All right? They were trying to instill a discipline in us they knew was somehow lacking, and probably especially in me. And so Marshall calls me up and he says he's got this book. And he said, "You know, I'm broke." I said, "Marshall, you're broke in wingtip brogues. I'm broke in flip-flops. And there's a difference. I had lost so much money. I had a restaurant." I mean, this is how hippies were. There we were, our restaurant. We had a line out the door after a year. Okay, a line waiting when we opened the door. Brown rice, honey instead of sugar, fresh water chestnuts, everything the best we could do. Our prices were so cheap, at 9 o'clock we knocked them down, and at 10:30, if you didn't have money, we had a free food line. Yeah. And we were losing money. We were hippies. That's the respect we had for money. And later the next year, we were having a talk of the group of us that ran, that operated the restaurant. And it was about, what are we going to do about meat? I mean, we'd read Autobiography of Yogi. Many of us were becoming vegetarians. And Zenny, who I had met in the Haight-Ashbury, who later becomes the chef for Tim McGraw and Faith Hill, who later runs the most expensive resort on the planet that's bought over by Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile. This is way before that happened to her. Zenny looks at me and she said, "Daryl, We can cut out beef and pork. But if we cut out chicken and fish, we're going to go broke. And I looked at Zenny, I said, if money's the only reason we're doing that, that's the lowest reason of all. 1 year later, we were broke. And 2 years later, Marshall calls me and he says he's got this book. And there it was, the book that was going to become a discipline known as Affirmations. Shakti Gawain had not yet written Affirmations. That was to come 7 years later. But Joe Carbo, the used car salesman, had it down. Thought power. Think about what you want. Image it every morning, every night. See the blah, 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 blah. So Marshall had his list. I had my list. 3 years later, Marshall's living next to Dianne Feinstein in a mansion with a Rolls Royce. He's a multimillionaire, and I've got a whole lot of money. I'm a retired drug dealer, and I've got a little Carmen Ghia, and I'm renting a flat on Union Street because I'm a hippie. And I look back on it because everybody has done affirmations in one form or another, and almost no one had the results that Marshall and I did. And the reason I think is because we had high need. High need. A need so high that Marshall and I, we never saw each other's cards, but I know every morning we got up and did those cards like Joe Carbo said. Every night we did those cards like Joe Carbo said. And it happened. There it was. 10 years later, I have presidential invitations to Deng Xiaoping coming to the United States. I'm on Dianne Feinstein's China committee. I've got an import-export company importing rugs from China. I met with McDonnell Douglas about through Rothschild Investment Bank about an offset deal with China. Things were happening. Thought worked. It works. Focus, belief, imagination. And then what happened? I'm sitting in my apartment on Union Street, and I hear these words. Life is good. And the words were, this isn't it. They were disturbing. Because only a few years before, I'd been a dirt poor hippie standing in line to the Haight-Ashbury Medical Clinic when anything was wrong. And now it appeared that this wasn't it. And I go, well. But Marshall and I had been doing this. We'd gone to a seminar at the time. Nothing is by accident. Michael Tom's seminar, where you close your eyes when you're looking for answers. Close your eyes, you quiet your mind, and you ask knowing. What he called knowing. What I now is you're asking spirit. You're not asking your rational mind. You're not going to your data bank saying, well, you should do this. You're not going to your memory. You're not asking your best friend who's going to go to their data bank and tell you what you should do. You ask spirit. So I closed my eyes. I said, what do I really want? If that's this is what is it? And this feeling of peace came over. Deep, deep, deep peace. A peace so deep that I thought, wow, if affirmations brought me all this stuff, and it did, maybe it'll bring me peace. So I started writing affirmations about peace. I am everywhere at once. I remember when I wrote that down, I thought, how in the hell can that could be? But I had stolen the line out of Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and I wrote it down. I am everywhere at once, every morning, every night. 3 months later, I'm in Marshall's real estate office. A couple walks in, and they say, we know you're working with affirmations and thoughts, and we have a book today that also works with them. The affirmation we're going to use is, I am entitled to miracles. I am entitled to miracles. Now that's a thought. That's a thought. After the group went over, I went up to him. I said, where'd this come from? And he said, well, the book was just published. I was to find out 20 years later, Marshall was one of four people who had given the Course in Miracles $5,000 to publish the first issue. And that's why they were at Marshall's office, real estate office, that morning. And I think the reason I was there, I had been doing affirmations about peace. Well, 3 months later, I'm reading the book. I order it. And it says this. Why do you want things to be a certain way? The answer is because of your past. Certain things have you happened you want more of, other things you don't want in your life. Well, the truth is, you are in no position to determine what's good or bad for you. Some of the things that you've enjoyed the most have retarded your progress. Other things that have been the most difficult and you suffered from, you've learned the most from. You believe that unless you're in control, life would be chaos. The truth is otherwise. If you could but turn tomorrow over to He who wants your happiness, because it is His happiness also, every moment would become an encounter with the Eternal.
Wow! An encounter with the Eternal. There I was, 31, stacks of $100 bills in the safe, deciding what I'm going to eat that night, taking tennis lessons to heal my relationship with my father. And every moment could become an encounter with the Eternal?
Wow! What did that mean? Well, I was supposed to turn it over. What did that mean? I was supposed to give up control. What did that mean? Those affirmations. So I stopped every one of my affirmations. And in the next 3 years, I lost every penny and went $250,000 in debt, and the house burned down. It was only till probably 10 years ago I realized what really had happened. I had not been misled, but the words were exactly this. If you could but turn tomorrow over. I was 31. It knew I couldn't turn tomorrow over. It knew I didn't have the requisite amount of faith. It knew. And yet at 31... if I were to be forgiven for anything, being headstrong, coming off many great things that happened to me, I blew past the sentence and let go, and it all went to hell in a handbasket. Part of my lesson about thought. But on the way down, I learned that as things happened, I couldn't think about what bad was going to happen. When my house burned down and my son was burned, I couldn't think about where are we going to live, because I knew about the power of thought. I knew if I worried about where I was going to live, we were going to be in trouble. I knew if I worried about his recovery, it was going to get worse. So I held it. That's learning about the power of thought. Upside, downside. 2 years later, we're in Marin County. Looking for a place to live, the most expensive county in the world. I have $2,000 in the bank because I haven't been paying rent for a few months. And we're looking in the backside, the back page of the Independent Journal, the newspaper. There was a full-page ad for Joe Carbo's book, Lazy Man's Way to Riches. And my wife goes, maybe we shall do those things again. Well, so I did go. We did our affirmations. Next month, $5,000. Her affirmation was, one of them, I traveled to Tahiti, Europe, and China. We hadn't been traveling ever since I blew the money in the bank. And that year, she went to all three. The affirmations worked. There they were, back again. But I sort of felt, man, I picked up that control thing. You know, I don't know whether I should have done it or not. Then I see a book. I run into a book. I'm on God's mailing list. How to do all things. Spirit does it all. You yourself can do nothing. But because of who you are, everything happens for you. But until you gain the power over your thought and yourself, you are not given all the power that is yours. Wow. So there it is. A year later, we're in a suite at the Hassler Hotel in Rome. Life is again good. We're living in Marin County, making the rent. And then I'm reading a book called Thinking and Destiny about how to create without karma, evolve that thinking, that thinking, that thinking. And I thought it was in the book, but it wasn't. I realized in retrospect, it couldn't have been in the book because it was absolutely antithetical to everything the book said. And the words were that I heard, 1983, your use of thought to create your reality is an inappropriate use of this power at this time. Because at this time, much of what you learn comes through adversity. And you are using this power to keep these needed situations away from you. I had no answer. for those words. But since the last time I had stopped doing affirmations, I lost every pen I had. House burns down, Benjamin gets in a fire. I was sort of nervous about doing it again. So I threw the I Ching, Chinese Oracle. Can I do affirmations? No. So I closed my eyes. I asked knowing, can I do affirmations? No. And so I didn't. And 2.5 years later, a 10-year prison sentence, and I am in the monastery I would not have chosen on my own. But there I focused my thought in a way I had never been before. There's something about meditating in a monastery that's different on Sunday morning than a church. I jokingly said, walking around the track in prison saying the 23rd Psalm is a lot different than mumbling that with a bunch of parishioners on Sunday morning. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Staff protects me. That's where it gets intense. That's where you do the work. That, under the gun, is how we learn. One of my observations is, God taught me to dance by shooting at my feet. And I'm a pretty good dancer now. And I had a lousy sense of rhythm. But he was a damn good shot. That's how I learned about thinking and the power of creation. Martha got a crash lesson in it. In the year 2000, and Martha was an inveterate worrier. She said her mother worried about everything. And the smarter you are, the more you worry about. And it was rampant. In the year 2000, when we moved to Tucson, she came down. Her liver failed first, then her kidneys. They medevaced her to Phoenix. They couldn't deal with this in Tucson. And on the way down there, in the ambulance, she hears these words. If you worry, you're going to die. Well, that's a crash course in the power of thinking, isn't it? You know? And then she opens up her eyes and she hears these words. I think we're going to lose her. I think we're going to lose her. And Martha, with the goodness of her heart, goes, oh, some poor lady's dying. I'm going to pray for her. She's praying. And then she opens her eyes and all these people are staring at her. And she realizes it's her. This is the power of thought. Under duress, lesson learned. So when I heard those words in the White Eagle reading, it caught my attention. And then it went on. Unexpectedly, and it said this, these words, about yogis. It said, there are certain people who known as yogis. We speak of the true and balanced and spiritually evolved yogi, who is wise and beautiful, and not all who follow the path of yoga are thus evolved. The yogi knows that the words of the white magic are produced by steadfast God thought. The yogi never wavers, never doubts, but holds the God thought so faithfully, so intensely, that he or she is expressing it in action and word. Do you remember the saying of Jesus, the greatest yogi in this present cycle? If ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto the mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove. But we have not faith. No, not even as much as a grain of mustard seed. That is the trouble. The materialist denies the power of faith and says it is impossible and denies the power of thought. Well, the reason why I shared at White Eagle that I was thinking about something was of those two elements, thought and Jesus, because those two had come to me 2 weeks before, in the middle of the night, when I was really uptight. I had been reading the last part of Doctrine of the Mothership, I mean, I wrote the damn thing. But, you know, I can't remember, you know. And I remember I was reading a channeling that I put towards the end of the book. The Manuscript of Survival by Aisha North. By now, so much will have been irrevocably changed within you all. And as usual, the outside phenomena accompanying this internal turnaround may be hard to perceive. And I was talking about the changes. And I said, we have changed a lot. And the world you see may not yet have changed, but it is about to. And it says something is going to be required of you. You are not meant to meditate your way outside of the earth plane. You are meant to transform the earth plane from the inside out. And you do this by thought, by opening every moment, every day. And the frustration was not that I didn't understand those words. The frustration was at the age of 80, I wasn't doing it. I wasn't doing it. And it said, this is going to be required. This is a prerequisite. A little wavering thing, a God thought here and there, ain't going to cut it. It's a state of consciousness. And like Windows 10, the support is being withdrawn. It's going to be a forced transition to Windows 11, my friends. And I knew I wasn't there. So 3 weeks ago, I'm sort of uptight, laying there in my bed. And I asked for help. I asked for help from a level I rarely do. And I'm a person who's needed a lot of help. And in those times, my questions have been answered. My asking has been answered. And it did so again. And this is what came. The breath. The breath. Wow. I mean, I've heard about the breath all the time. Yogis, concentrating the breath. Concentrating the breath. And to me, it's like one of those things that you hear about, like being vegetarian, you know, yeah. Okay, you do it some, you know, okay. But what I got was this. With every breath, remember God's love. With every breath, remember life itself. And the second thing that came in was remember it the way Jesus got it. Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Breath, breath, breath. Love, love, love. Well, we all know about Jesus. A lot of people have been scarred by what we've been told about him. You know, guilted, told that you lowly sinners, but God love you assholes so much, he sent his loving son down and had him killed for you. Okay. I always said that mankind wasn't ready for unconditional love. But if you approach it through guilt and shame, you have an opening. And they've done it. But the reason why Jesus came in that night was that in the year 2000, he appeared through a website, Christ's Letters. And in that he mentioned he prepared this lady in South Africa, a medium, to clear out her issues over the years and then began speaking and telling the truth of what really happened. And in this book, he said, there he was in Palestine, growing up, rebellious, didn't like the rabbis. He thought life was difficult enough with them without these sanctimonious people telling them they had to do this, pay this, do that, and follow even more rules. And he said he was rather indolent, hung out with prostitutes, gig thing, made money, had an attitude, really rebellious, got in a lot of arguments with people. But he said his mother really loved him, Mary. Always thought he was something special. And so he said in his early 20s, he began thinking, you know, he really hasn't done much in his life, right? You know, sort of wasted it. But he said he always cared about people, always cared about the underdog, always wanted life to be better. And he said, so he decided that he was going to change, turn over a new leaf, go back home, deal with his mother, you know, be the son that she wants him to be a better person. So he said that was what he was thinking when he decided to get baptized by John the Baptist. Nothing more. That's what he thought he was going to do. Oh, I'll go get baptized. It'll help me on my path of what I'm going to do, turn over a new leaf. In his book, he said, when he hit those waters, it was amazing. He saw the love. He felt the power. His reality was transformed from what it had been the instant before to what it was in that instant. When he stumbled out of that water, he was blown out. He said the story about going into the desert is made up, where he was tempted by the devil. He said stumbling into the desert, he had to come to grips with what happened to him in the water. He had to realize in a new way what that truth was. And he said he realized that it loved us. That power, that feeling that transformed him was God. It was life. And the nature of that power was to nurture, protect, expand. It is life itself. And he said, that's what I need to tell people. It's not like we think it is. Well, we all know what happened. And so he came back in his website, wrote these books, channeled a few things, and I read them. I found them really interesting. All right? Really interesting. But they were like a lot of other things I read, gone along the way, until 2 weeks ago when I asked for help. And the answer came, breathe. Breathe the truth that Jesus said. I want to say something about affirmations. Ever since I let go, I haven't really done them. And it isn't like my life has been the way I wanted. Many things have happened since then. Many extraordinary things. But I've not had that sense that I'm moving in a way that I want to with affirmations. And what I learned in that moment, I believe the Spirit gave me, was it's a matter of priority. First, ask for the connection. Get the connection. Everything else happens. Breathe. Ask. Receive. Love. It knows who you are. It knows what you need. It knows what you want. And the impelling reason to do so is the crisis now in front of us. These letters, quoting from Jesus, if I may say so, these letters have been written prior to the most crucial time in your history, when the travail is truly upon you. This is not a punishment from someone on high, but a natural working out of the law of existence. What you carry in your minds and hearts will eventually externalize in your body, life, and environment. I have long since ascended to the highest frequencies of consciousness and vibration in this celestial kingdoms, and I'm divine consciousness itself individualized. My consciousness can encircle the globe to whoever calls on me. I have returned to all those who are neither Muslim nor Christian, Buddhist nor Hindu. I have come to those who desire to know the reality behind all existence. He's come at this time to prepare us. And that's why when Martha Booth said, prepare us, I had no answer. And now I think I've been given a taste of it. something for me to do, something for us to do. Bucky Fuller talked about the crises that's happening, and he was psychic. He said, for example, of the problems that we were going to be having, he said, the bankruptcy of the United States is for a reason. The bankruptcy is happening. The bankruptcy of all nations is happening, and it's going to free mankind. These earth changes are the birth pains to a coming new era. And in 217 of Critical Path, Bucky wrote, there are millions in the USA, for instance, who would become activist patriots and get out their guns and start a Nazi movement. 1981. Who'd have thought? That was a part of the crisis without precedent. Another part was the possibility of nuclear war. Quoting from my book, Doctrine of the Mothership. March 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine. An article in an EU magazine, German magazine. Current events are reminiscent of Alois Erlmeyer's World War III prophecies. Noting, just a few months ago, it was considered impossible for many that the mysterious seer could be right in his predictions for our time. The danger of a Russian invasion, a Chinese attack on the US, a devastating nuclear war on Europe's soil, and generally, who believes in prophecies? Ever since the Russians invaded Ukraine, more and more people, however, have been pointing out the frightening parallel. Errol Miles' prophecies are among his best known. Made between 1947 and 1957, he repeatedly warned of a major catastrophe, a war with devastating nuclear strikes. The cause would be the murder of a high-ranking politician at a peace conference in Budapest. I don't know how many of you watch the news, but on Thursday, October 16th, the White House announced a meeting about peace with Russia in Budapest. I am not saying it's going to happen. None of us know the future, really. But I am saying we are entering a crisis where we're going to have to up-level. So my advice to myself and to others is, Windows 11, folks. Let's go for it. God, namaste. We'll make it.